Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. On November 5th, Californians will vote on 10 propositions on issues ranging from crime and healthcare to rent control and the climate crisis. For the first half of today's show, we'll discuss Proposition 4, the Parks, Environment, Energy, and Water Bond Measure. Prop 4 would authorize the state to issue $10 billion in bonds for environmental and climate projects, drinking water, drought, flood, and water resilience, extreme heat mitigation, parks and outdoor access, wildfire and forest resilience, and many other climate-related issues. Joining us to talk about Prop 4 and other climate issues is Aaron Cantu, an award-winning investigative reporter for Capital and Maine. Hi, Aaron. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Aaron. You've got so many articles out right now in addition to the piece about Prop 4. Given that you do such a great job of covering the climate crisis and all aspects of the climate crisis in California, I want to ask you what you think is at stake in this election. You've got a piece called "Would Environmental Justice in California Survive a Second Trump White House? It is doubtful. Activists question whether the state would protect communities of color if the EPA is stripped of its watchdog powers." So based on the interviews you've been doing, what is at stake in this election?
Yeah. So obviously it's a presidential election. And in addition, there's lots of down ballot stuff here in California. So I tried to take each of those pieces, on their own terms. I think in terms of the national election with Trump, coming back to office, we got a preview of what his administration was like the first time. As part of that story in particular, I read through the Project 2025 document, which was a collection of authors, many of whom worked for the first Trump administration. And I looked specifically at how this document contemplates reforming or decimating the EPA, and specifically zeroed in on how the Trump administration or people who worked for him hope to take away civil rights protections for environmental justice wrongs. Right now, under the Civil Rights Act signed by Lyndon Johnson, people are allowed to allege that a state agency is violating their civil rights, basically by allowing toxic pollution or creating disparate impacts when it comes to siting a factory in a black or brown neighborhood as opposed to a white neighborhood, using pesticides. People are able to bring those sorts of civil rights cases in a federal court and say, "Hey, the state is violating my civil rights." The Trump administration, people who have worked for the Trump administration, essentially want to take this protection away that has been available to us since the 1960s. So that would be a really big change for environmental justice in this country.
Can you talk about how Proposition 4 would affect frontline communities? You did a great job of really looking at how this $10 billion bond would be spent. So how would it specifically affect frontline communities?
Yeah, sure. So Proposition 4, $10 billion, that's for a whole range of different climate capital infrastructure projects. Because climate change has a lot of different effects, it creates floods. So a large part of this bond would go toward building up infrastructure, protecting against floods across the state. Much of it also goes toward infrastructure to recycle groundwater, something that is becoming more important as droughts get worse each year. There's stuff in there specifically about extreme heat, which is what I wrote about. Comparatively less money is going toward protections from extreme heat than stuff like drought protection or flood protection or, you know, wildfire prevention. Those priorities are getting comparatively more money under the $10 billion bond, but extreme heat actually is the deadliest effect of climate change. In Los Angeles, specifically where I live and where I wrote about, but also I believe statewide, extreme heat is the deadliest, but also one of the more silent effects of climate change that are having a harmful impact today. And so specifically, I went out in LA during a heat wave that we had on September 6th. I was around downtown LA, and it was the second hottest day in the city's recorded history on that day, September 6th. And I, you know, just spoke with folks, homeless individuals who were, you know, trying to take shade in a park. I spoke with folks who were at a cooling center, some senior citizens who didn't have air conditioning at home and, you know, had to come out to a senior center space to be in the air conditioner. And so this bond would, you know, provide some money to build up cooling centers. It would also provide some money to, essentially ensure that cities like LA and you know, parts of San Francisco that have this heat island effect, where it gets so much hotter because of all of the asphalt and the concrete and the lack of trees, that these communities would have, you know, centers of refuge where people could go and cool down and avoid that deadly heat.
This is such an important story that you wrote. You write about how it was 112 in downtown LA in September, where residents just roasted for a week. And you write about people that you met on the streets, people who are living on the streets. In MacArthur Park in Los Angeles, Michael Martinez crouched shirtless in a sliver of shade cast by a short palm tree. He sipped water mixed with a red hydration additive from a plastic jug. He said, "Why is the weather changing? Why does it seem hotter than it's ever been?" He's lived on the streets for 2 decades, and he told you that he's never felt such heat.
Yeah, it was eye-opening to speak with Mr. Martinez. I think often the discussion around climate change can be a bit maybe academic or formal, or there's a sort of elitism about it. You know, you have to understand climate models, et cetera, to really know what's going on. But, you know, you speak with people who are out experiencing the heat, and they'll say something just very common sense and intuitive. I mean, he said, "Why is the weather changing? You know, I've been out on the streets for 2 decades. And now it's just unbelievably hot." You know, something else he said that wasn't in the story was, as a kid, he loved being outside. He loved playing sports, you know, in his neighborhood, and he always loved the sun. He loved to be outside, and he feels like his relationship to, you know, to the outdoors, to the sun itself, is changed. And, you know, he was looking for answers. Why is the weather changing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about climate change, but you know, it can have that sort of just really fundamental effect on people, where they know deep in their gut that something is wrong when you feel those kinds of temperatures.
You just feel for this man and so many others like him. Did you happen to ask him why he has been on the streets for 2 decades?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he has had issues with addiction, with drugs. He spoke a bit about his family. You know, we don't have a lot of words in the story to get into, you know, some of the details we'd like to get into, but he described a difficult relationship with his father. I think, unfortunately, a lot of houseless people that you meet, it's a complex set of circumstances and a lack of safety net. And, you know, once you fall, it's very difficult to get back up. And, you know, when you have those kinds of issues of poverty and addiction, and you combine those with heat, you know, extreme heat and climate change, you know, frontline communities, I mean, I guess that's something we defined as, you know, folks who live more on the margins. Maybe they're, you know, farm workers, you know, in the Central Valley, or, you know, they could be houseless people in one of the cities. You know, they've lost access to stable housing. I mean, these are often the folks who don't have, you know, access to air conditioner. They don't have access to a solid roof over their heads to protect against sudden, you know, deluges of flooding. And so when we talk about frontline communities, often these are the people who are, you know, did the least to contribute to climate change, but are first in line to experience the devastating effects of climate change.
Wow. Aaron Cantu is an investigative reporter with Capital in Maine, and we are talking about Prop 4. It's a $10 billion climate bond, and Aaron does a really good job of course, going much deeper to look at how we got to this place and who would actually, who's being really hit so hard by the climate crisis. Can you give us some context here, Aaron? Because in your piece about Prop 4, you also talk about what happened with Governor Newsom, prodded by Newsom. The California legislature rescinded or delayed almost $210 million for programs to prepare for climate disasters like extreme heat waves. Half of those cuts targeted programs to expand cooling centers and implement long-term solutions. So can you tell us, why was this $210 million delayed? And then why are voters voting on a $10 billion climate bond? Why is this on the ballot in the first place?
Yeah, those are great questions. So, you know, having covered climate in the state for a few years now, I was reporting when in 2022, the Governor Newsom and the state legislature, you know, essentially passed this $54 billion climate package. And it was at the time, you know, Newsom talked about it as the biggest one-time, you know, spending on climate that's ever been seen in any state. And it was a big deal. I mean, it was a hopeful moment. Unfortunately, since then, the state has been in a budget deficit, and it's just been a continued chipping away at this program. And so some of the advocates I talked to, you know, they talk about how climate spending needs to be something permanent, because this is something that's only, you know, it's not going anywhere. If anything, the climate crisis is getting worse every year. And so the amount of investment, you know, and money that we spend on it is going to increase. It has to be something permanent in the budget, and not the sort of one-time spending thing, because then you see what's happening now, which is, you know, the state is cutting from essential programs like, you know, programs essentially to build up resilience to heat and other climate disasters. So since 2022, since that, you know, that package, you know, I've kind of continued to cover the budget cuts in subsequent years, and, you know, try to keep a focus on how those cuts are impacting, you know, people, particularly, you know, vulnerable people who, like we were talking about, are on the front lines of the climate crisis.
So again, we're talking about a $10 billion bond. If you have any questions or comments about Proposition 4 and the climate crisis, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. And after the election, we will do a show about California's budget, because there are a lot of questions here about, you know, why a bond is needed for these issues in such a wealthy state. And so we'll definitely do an entire show about that. So let's talk a little bit more about how this money would be spent. We touched on this earlier, but $3.8 billion will go to build out infrastructure to recycle water and improve flood control systems such as levees.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, basically the biggest chunk of the bond is toward water issues. And it's like two extreme ends of the water question. I mean, one is to protect the state against extreme flooding. You know, we've seen what happens when sudden extreme downpours happen in regions that were scorched with wildfire. You know, you have fires, and then a few months later, you have this epic rainfall that creates mudslides. It creates some really dangerous and hazardous conditions for people who live in these near these hillsides, because during the fires, the soil is not, essentially the soil gets scorched. It's not able to hold that moisture, and so the runoff creates a real danger. And by the way, to this question, sort of why is the state issuing these bonds? It's a really good question. I mean, this is something that the climate bond had been under discussion, among environmentalists, lawmakers, starting last year when the deficit was revealed and Newsom started proposing cuts. So it's been something in discussion for the past couple of years. One disadvantage of this bond is, sure, the state gets $10 billion to invest in climate infrastructure, but we basically have to pay $6 billion in interest on those bonds for the next, I believe, 40 years. So it's like $400 million a year is going to be going just to service these bonds. I mean, basically, it's like a loan. You're taking out loans, and the state is going to have to pay interest on it. So, I mean, it's a really good question, why this stuff isn't just paid for directly by the state. If we know climate change is only getting worse, and this is a priority for the state, why are we issuing bonds? Great question. Governor Newsom hasn't actually come out, for or against this bond. This has been something supported by, I believe the Nature Conservancy was one of the big groups behind it, but now there's dozens of supporters of the bond, including climate environmental NGOs, as well as Cal Fire, I believe. So this is money that is desperately needed across a wide array of programs. The question of why it's a bond versus just being from the general fund, it's a great question.
Exactly, and a lot of voters across the aisle are tired of bonds, especially when it comes to climate change, because they're going to say the same thing. In a wealthy state like California, why do we need a bond to deal with the climate crisis? So according to CalMatters, on the pro side for Prop 4, you've got a number of environmental organizations, the California Professional Firefighters, California Labor Federation, Teachers Association, the Democratic Party. They've raised $1 million. Those who oppose Prop 4 have not raised any money. Of course, it includes the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. They oppose all bonds, the anti-tax group, the California Republican Party. So if people are angry about this bond in particular and wonder, why isn't the state just paying for this? What happens if this does not pass? I mean, as you said, these programs are desperately needed.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, bonds aren't the best way to buy something, just like, paying for something with a loan. It sometimes isn't the best way to buy something, but, it's something that the state needs. And I think you can say that from a pretty impartial perspective. In fact, $10 billion is almost scraping the barrel for some of these priorities. And speaking about the heat portion of it, which, again, is a relatively small part of the bond, but that's what I had focused on. The bond is only going to pay for capital infrastructure. So, the money can be put toward building more cooling centers. It can be put toward using building materials that reflect sunlight and don't absorb so much of the sun's rays. And so that may lead to lower temperatures, in certain parts of the city, more tree planting, which obviously is something we need. But the money wouldn't go toward administrative costs. Something that I noticed during that heat wave was the level of communication from the county and the city to residents was very much lacking. There's not enough staff, to go out and to meet with people who, maybe are homeless and trying to stay cool. So the money wouldn't go toward those essential sort of administrative costs. It would just go toward infrastructure, and that is something that we need. But you know, in the larger context, $10 billion isn't enough to you know, pay for everything we need to confront the climate crisis.
Right. And the other question is, who's going to make these decisions, given that there's so much need out there in our massive state?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, you know, unfortunately, these problems have been building up for a while, and they're continuing to build up. And, you know, we may get to a point where some of these needs are very acute, and it becomes an emergency. You know, we just need to get these things right now. But you know, I think the bond itself, you know, $10 billion, you know, can maybe be seen as a sort of down payment for a lot of these infrastructure needs that you know, are going to become more necessary. But certainly something, you know, the residents of California should be prepared to invest more money into.
A listener just wrote in and said, why do we need this bond when we have so many billionaires in this state? I just looked it up. According to Patch.com, we've got 60 billionaires in the state of California. Like I said earlier, we'll do a show after the election about money in California. Who's paying taxes? Where does the money actually go? I think it's such an important show. Thank you for that email. Aaron, before we let you go, we wanted to ask you about your piece in A Race Defining Party Identity, Oil Money Flows to a California Democrat. You write, the oil and gas industry is pouring money into a closely watched Democrat-on-Democrat assembly race in Southern California's Inland Empire, an area that's feeling the effects of climate change and a seat that could help shape the state's plans to slash greenhouse gas emissions. In the national media, they love to say that we live in a very deep blue state, and they often don't talk about how you have, you know, Democrats who are for, let's say, bills that are supported by environmental justice groups, and Democrats who oppose those bills because they get a lot of money from oil and gas. And so it's just very simplistic to say that we're just such a deep blue state, because the Democrats in California are very different in this state. So can you tell us quickly about this race? You've got Adam Perez, a Desert Hot Springs police detective, running for a seat now occupied by Eloise Gomez Reyes, who's campaigning for an open state Senate seat.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is one of those dynamics that is unique to California, and maybe is something over the last decade has become more prominent. You know, they're nicknamed moderate Democrats, you know, I don't necessarily agree with that label, or I mean, I don't think maybe it's descriptive enough. But what you often find is, you know, the politicians labeled as moderates, you know, often that means they'll be more willing to, you know, accept or tolerate spending by corporate political action committees in their favor, or to accept, you know, those campaign contributions directly. And yeah, this was a $500,000 independent expenditure from a PAC propped up by oil companies in California. And so that PAC, you know, is spending on ads and other services for Mr. Adam Perez for the 50th Assembly District in San Bernardino County. And so, you know, we wanted to highlight that. But also, if you look at, if you read the story, you know, we also tried to get some pretty specific facts on how this district is predicted to change because of climate change in the near future. You know, we found an average of five more August days above 104 degrees starting next year. You know, an increase in extreme rainfall, at least one more day of extreme rainfall a year starting in the next decade. So, you know, we're trying to draw a link between the political actions of the oil and gas industry and the actual effects of climate change, which, you know, we are feeling more and more, it seems, every year.
So Perez is running against Robert Garcia, an assistant principal in the Ontario Montclair School District, who's backed by the California Democratic Party. He also has received $100,000 from the Jane Fonda Climate PAC and the California Environmental Voters PAC. You report that he's getting a lot of money from labor unions. He's benefited from $712,000 in independent expenditures. So is this where we're at now, Aaron, that it's you've got to raise almost $1 million for state seats?
Yeah, it's almost unbelievable, right? I mean, I was looking at you know, how much money is pouring into a state assembly seat. It's a great question. I mean, we, you know, my role as a reporter was, you know, fortunately California puts all these numbers up on the internet and they're very easy to access. So, you know, I wanted to get that information out to readers. But you know, as far as my personal opinion, I mean, yeah, I think the amount of money in politics is a concerning thing, whether at local or, you know, the national level. It can feel very far removed, you know, for sure, for the average voter. But you know, you have Robert Garcia. You know, he's almost at $800,000 from mostly labor unions. PACs representing nurses and teachers, and the money that he got from climate-based organizations a little bit less. Probably much less than those figures, and that's direct contributions as well as independent expenditures. But yeah, I mean, there's no denying that you need a lot of money to run for office in this country, and you know that obviously is going to have different effects.
Well, Aaron, huge thanks for your reporting. We really appreciate, especially lifting up the voices of unhoused people and talking about just how they're dealing with such extreme heat. Aaron Cantu is an award-winning investigative reporter with Capital and Maine. We were talking about Proposition 4. You can find his stories at KALW.org. Click news and your call. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about environmentalists working to flip the U.S. House to Democratic control. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this.
Tune into Cross Currents this morning at 11. We consider the power of immigrant voters.
If you are not organized, you don't have the power to make change. And what do we bring to the table? We bring numbers. Our population.
Organizing to make a change. That's this morning at 11 on Cross Currents from KALW News.